Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamflett and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we review Raw, SmackDown, the Wednesday Night War between AEW and NXT, pay-per-views, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, they're joined by Hamflett and Sidgwick. And Michael Hamflett, how does it feel to be a crap psychic? And by that I mean a psychic to predict what's going to happen on Monday Night Raw, but only for things that are crap.
Yeah, that's always the way, isn't it? The stuff we do where we try and be earnest on the preview shows and talk about how we maybe would fix a program that's gone wrong or just like enhance the stakes or the credibility, we get nowhere near. And then that little piss takey segment we save for the end ends up coming true almost to frightening detail. Like, we know they listen. The gag is always there. They listen. They're listening to the wrong halves of the podcast. They didn't listen to the first bit when we still got a bit of, like, serious, invested, like, sort of, I don't know, analysis, I guess, before it just descends into parody like these episodes of Rod. Like, all flippancy aside, yeah, I thought this was a pretty enjoyable, credible edition of... Sorry, I forgot my lines. What was it you told me? It was crap, wasn't it? This was laughable crap.
Laughable crap. Literal worst of all time tier. Like, on so many different levels. Again, there's just so much to bury on, like, within the text of the show itself. And don't worry, we will get there. There's a moment in the show where Drew McIntyre's just backstage and he's walking, as so often these acts do. And then just AJ Styles and Omos simply materialize with the only purpose of having a conversation. It's like, what were you, literally, what were you doing before? What was AJ Styles doing before? Because I've got no idea. I've literally got no idea what he's doing before. Just standing backstage. He's not prepping for a match. He's not like, warming up for one. He's not warming down from one. He's simply there, materialized out of thin air to hold the conversation. No one else will bury this, mainly because I'm pedantic, but the format is so established as being bad that the show is literally even worse than people say. But at the very least, it wasn't a punishing procession of 3.25-star matches that could get at least an extra full star in literally any other promotion that was halfway competent. There was a lot of buryable schlock on this show, and I'm looking forward to doing precisely that.
Yeah, it was an enjoyable show. Not for any of the right reasons, but it was an enjoyable show. It's just bonkers to think we are, what now, 12 days away from WrestleMania? Less, probably. 11, I think, actually. This is what they're presenting to be like. Quick, get your tickets now. Like, they've got, like, I think I read somewhere, like, 2,000 tickets still to be bought. They're, like, really expensive floor ones. And it's, like, off the back of this. Well, you better get your tickets now if you want to see more of this.
The best thing about this Raw, and by that, of course, I mean the best, worst Schadenfreude thing about this Raw, is that I believe, anyway, that they taped next week's and this week's in a block.
Yep.
With the idea being, I guess, to ensure that everyone can make the show or some kind
it's of... Because they're moving out of
Thunderdome commitments means that they had to write, produce 6 hours, essentially, of product. And they're in the same mood as they were, the same absolutely incompetent mood. that they were in, that's going to be next week's show. You know what the best bit is? If you look at the actual continuity within this actual episode itself, next week's show was taped before this week's. It's going to be a total and utter mess, even more so than this week's next week.
It's worth noting as well that this time last year, they were in that like dank and sterile, well, it was anything but sterile, it turned out to be, but they were in that dank atmosphere at the Performance Centre, empty. Like, those go-home shows are pretty great because you had nothing but a camera and the promos felt underscripted, unusually, for the amount of time the wrestlers had to go. I remember, like, really good stuff from Seth Rollins, of all people, was doing good stuff, and Kevin Owens, and there was, like, a lot of guys that were just, there was nothing to do but kind of just stand and stare and talk. The matches felt like the awkward bit. Now, we're in the award-winning, critically acclaimed, obscenely expensive Thunderdome, and we're getting this instead. I'm all like, nostalgia works so rapidly at this point. I'm like, I'm one of those YouTube guys. I'm like, God, can't we go back to 2020 in the empty Performance Center? Please.
There's a bit of me though that is concerned we're not going to get to the five-star review because I don't want to skip. Right now, I'm just going to put this straight out there. And not that I think that you would skip this, but you even coming close to suggesting that we're going to skip Shane McMahon's expose of Braun Strowman. I mean, I've searched out that sodding report card they flashed up me, signed by Mrs. Strowman. We'll get to it. We start off the show with, I get it, he's a babyface, but why did he show up this week? He had no match. If you're Drew McIntyre and you've got a target on your back, just don't show up to work that week. Just say, all right, see you in 2 weeks. Bye. But no, because he's a babyface, he shows up and we start with Sarah Schreiber going, you reckon? For a split second, I thought, I wonder if Sarah Schreiber's going to jump Drew McIntyre here to get a shot at the title. But McIntyre said, oh, well, anyone thinking of taking Lashley up on his offer, bounty on Drew McIntyre's head, etc. Should wonder if Lashley was a man of his word and he dared someone to come after him. And it turns out no one did for the majority of this show. But then the show actually started with the Hurt Business coming down to the ring. Oh, just not going to get to say that properly again because the coolest stable's not a thing anymore. MVP comes down. He says Lashley's going to walk in and walk out of WrestleMania as champion. Lashley cuts a promo, says, look, whoever takes out Drew McIntyre, they will earn a title match at WrestleMania. MVP said, I don't want people to think that we're being generous. We just think that McIntyre's already had his opportunity and wants someone new in the picture. And said, is anyone willing to step up? And no one responded. And then MVP said there were two men who were not going to get that opportunity. And he showed a replay of Alexander and Benjamin losing that handicap match they had the previous week. Got bollocked. Lashley said he was embarrassed of them. And they talked about the tag title loss as well. He said he couldn't count on them more. He said he refused to associate himself with incompetence. MVP said they failed miserably. And the two of them, understandably, got pretty pissed off at this, saying, Alexander said, couldn't we have done this privately? My thoughts exactly, Cedric. And Benjamin said, did you just bring us out here to embarrass us? Fires up. He says, we've always had your back, Lashley. You're only world champion because of us. MVP tries to calm things down. Lashley decks Alexander. Benjamin brawls with Lashley. But Lashley ends up giving him a flatliner. And Lashley said the Hurt Business is over as far as Benjamin Alexander are concerned. What did you think of this opener, Michael Sidgwick?
I think that 2 years, 3, 4 years from now, I'm going to get infuriated by various threads on R-Squared Circle, in which people will say, oh, God, they broke up the Hurt Business so early. They were such a great faction. No, they weren't. They looked incredibly cool. They had the potential to be a good faction. They resonated as something vaguely big time and legit on the curve that is WWE Raw. But let's not revise history here. The Hurt Business feuded with Apollo Crews and Ricochet for about 9 months. The same matches every single week. It was astonishing. It was almost like a house show loop that happened to take place in one town and it was televised. Absolute insanity, brain worms. And that's really plagued the Hurt Business from the off. I can't really mourn the Hurt Business. I love the way they looked in the suits. Mm. I love the way they carried themselves. Like, I don't deny that they had the potential to be a real main event act, but let's not, there's never going to be a DVD of the Hurt Business. There's never going to be a three-disc DVD set of the Hurt Business. There might be a network documentary in which their career is sort of catalogued, and it will be an absolute indictment of how bad it is, much like they do with Kevin Owens and Liv Morgan and Dean Ambrose's Chronicle, because that's just the way these things happen. But at the same time, it's still a damn shame that they were broken up, as I said, because of the potential they held, because of the potential they held to build this exact storyline that has completely fallen off the rails in the train wreck that it is. So my understanding is that Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander were falling out for reasons a few months ago. Plot thread totally abandoned. they then united as one, decided, well, we're in this business together. We look after our colleagues in the Hurt Business. So let's try and weaken Sheamus. Was that the week they were trying to interfere in Lashley's match with Sheamus? And Lashley's like, hang on. Mm. Don't bother doing that. I want to win fair and square. And then he decides, actually, I want an unfair advantage on Drew McIntyre, actually. So what I'll do is I'll put a bounty on his head. Oh, you've got your pals who are tag team champions who could do that for you. Actually, the tag team champions got beat by Drew McIntyre in one match. It's just total brainworms. I cannot catalogue the chronology of all of this effectively because it's pure and total brainworms. The fact that they've broken up is no sadder than anything else that has potential. And in the biggest indictment of WWE I can think of, virtually everything on this show has potential because they've got unlimited resources with which to make a good TV show, and they have an elite roster of television stars, in theory, that could make a good television show. All of this is a brain worms addled mess, and I hate it.
We'll always have the photo shoot handful from that pay-per-view when they won titles.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I'm with Cedric 100% here. Like, good on a really, really awful show is still just good, not great. And the Hurt Business were good to the extent of their aesthetic some of the time, like how much they looked and carried themselves like a big deal, which Raw does need. Raw does need someone or something to feel like a big deal when so few of them do, when they're all such, when they feel like marks like the rest of us. The Hurt Business didn't feel like marks for a second, so that was good.
And they saved us from...
Yeah, they turned babyface that week to just deal with retribution and then like scuff them like off the shoe that they were once they were done with it and went back to being heels. Look, I'm not pandering to you when I say this, Wilborn. I was sadder about the Iconics splitting up. Like, at least I was like allowed to feel something for that act once. Mm. But Hurt Business were great. Like, they were great. Look at them. They're great. Thing is, right, and like, I haven't been on wrestling Twitter this morning, Reddit, wherever. People are going to post those pictures where they've got all the belts, or they're looking really great in the suits, and they're going to be RIP in the Hurt Business and mourning the loss of this great act or whatever it was. Like, Bobby Lashley and MVP were bollocking Cedric and Shelton for getting excited about winning matches at the back end of last year. Like, this has been like illogical garbage for quite a while. And that's not coming from like weathered cynics. That's just coming from watching the show. Like, and he used to say, this is even over. The tagline of WrestleMania is back in business. Could it not be that Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander are going to prove their loyalty to Bobby Lashley after all on the night? I know interference has been banned, or at least they were banned as members of the Hurt Business. Now they're not members of the Hurt Business. Could they technically interfere again? Is it going to be like that time that John Laurinaitis fired the Big Show so the Big Show could interfere on his behalf? Is it one of them things anyway? Like, Bobby Lashley's going to fight Cedric next week like he fought Shelton this week. They're recording these two Raws back to back. He's going to beat them both, and it's going to be like, right, that's Bobby Lashley's now a man on his own, and a man on his own can't beat Drew McIntyre. And then is it going to turn out that he's not a man on his own after all? I'm not even convinced this is 100% dead, which isn't bad, I guess. That's like, that's cute enough. Yeah, they were a half decent act in a pretty bad era, so those are going to stick out. I'm not going to fake some sort of like misery over it. Bobby Lashley, like, ultimately as well, Bobby Lashley has kind of been made into the main event, or he should have been years ago. That's what this act was fairly successful in doing. MVP's done it. Hurt Business have helped us, heaters. Like, that element of the job has been done. Like, Bobby Lashley's probably made off the back of this. So really, I'd be mourning the loss of Bobby Lashley as a headliner more than the splitting of the stable.
Counterpoint before we move on. I don't personally think they would create a WrestleMania tagline around Cedric Alexander.
WrestleMania 37, Gary the Goat Garbutt.
So we had Schreiber catching up with Riddle, talking about him being attacked by Sheamus last week because of his scooter. He said he didn't know why it happened. not realizing how bloody annoying this character is, clearly. He said he didn't know whether Sheamus had a tummy ache or just didn't have a soul. Took particular offense to that comment. But he said he was pissed off. He was as pissed off as he would be if he'd dropped a burrito. And then he saw potential. Wandered up to him, of course, one half, the better half of the hosts of WrestleMania 37. And he got confused. It's not a roast. He's a host. Oh, it's funny. He talked about roasting a pig. Titus O'Neil said, are you all right? Went to check his forehead. And Riddle said, they checked me earlier. I'm fine.
Talk about what was funny. What happened next?
Yeah, so O'Neil said, no, I'm hosting with Hulk Hogan. He walked off and then Sheamus just decked him. And said, see you out there, basically. That was good.
Sheamus battering Riddle is unbelievable pro wrestling content. That stuff with the scooter last week, that running as if from nowhere, which again can only exist in WWE's weird backstage universe where they're not even going to bother to explain the invisible cameras or why people appear as if from nowhere or why corridors are lit with like a red spotlight for it. Just things just happen. So you can absolutely allow for this cartoon moment of Sheamus running from off camera and plowing into him. I got a lot out of this. I want Sheamus to Daniel Bryan Riddle at WrestleMania. Give me a bro.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Bro,
15 seconds. This is funny. I'm enjoying watching this dickhead get battered by Sheamus.
They could roast a pig if Titus O'Neil banters off Hulk Hogan when Hulk Hogan inevitably, with his mush head, forgets his lines again, as he is wont to do.
Before we got Riddle and Sheamus, I'm just going to very, very briefly mention Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin bollocked Postman Pierce, demanded a match. The match for Benjamin tonight, Alexander next week. And then just because he paused, they went, oh, what's wrong? Well, you got to go and check with him or something. Because you always have to check with Roman Reigns. I couldn't care less. Let's move on. And I got very stupidly excited when I realised that Samoa Joe wasn't on commentary. Oh, how my hopes were going to be dashed by the end of this show. I thought, oh, he's not on commentary. There's a bounty on someone's head. Could no. So then we got a match, Riddle versus Sheamus, non-title, of course. And surprise, surprise, copy-paste everything I've said for the last 4 weeks. Sheamus had a great match on Monday Night Raw. It doesn't matter who you put him with. Yeah, I thought this was really enjoyable. There was a really good bit with Riddle running up the ropes to suplex Sheamus off the turnbuckles. Sheamus hit Riddle with a white noise on the apron for a near fall. And he hit him with an Alabama slam. And then Sheamus set up for a bro kick. Riddle counters with a knee strike. But then Sheamus blocked a kick, hit a knee strike of his own. 1, 2, 3. And then again, Hamflet, post-match, lost fair and square, just attacked Sheamus as he was celebrating on the top ropes, and they were like, yeah, bro, dot wav. That's gonna get him over. What?
Arsehole. But that they just can't manage or book baby faces effectively. Same old there. I swear to God, you know, like if Sheamus hadn't had 5 years where he was the company chosen guy, Triple H workout buddy, fella type guy, he'd be in the middle of his own Yes Movement or Rusev Day at this point. It's work. Like, he's made himself so undeniable at one of the worst times of his career to do it. You know, he's like, he's 12 or 13 years deep into a push, so his character feels ancient. We're in the middle of a pandemic, so there isn't a crowd there to support him. I feel confident he'd be getting some of the biggest reactions of the show. Like, these matches just keep happening for Sheamus. And it's all probably too little, too late. He finds 10-15 minute matches on Raw. That's what he's given, and they're not boring. He demands a fucking wizard. Like, I don't know how he's doing it. Loved his work again. Like, yeah, I know we're all pretty critical of Riddle or the ability to emotionally invest in Riddle, but again, you have to take that moment of saying how great the matches can be, how physical it all is. Sheamus is another perfect opponent for you to just be like superhuman exhibitions of strength with him. It's all really, really good to watch. I'll take some more of it at WrestleMania. I don't like match to build a match booking when you've had the whole thing here. You have to really meaty 15-minute match. This is not like the, oh, I like that 5 minutes, I'll take 10 at WrestleMania. This is like, no, I've had 15, can I have 12 seconds at WrestleMania? In reverse. Sheamus is amazing.
In defense of WWE, even though by their standards of booking a babyface, you can halfway like excuse the post match because it was sort of turnabout as fair play. But the problem is, this isn't like beat to beat angle work. This is a beat. The match you're going to get at WrestleMania, then a beat. So it's like, it's all completely undermined by the fact that, yeah, he didn't get like brutally beat down and injured. He just got like a bit of a shove into a thing. So he, by WWE standards, I kind of got the post-match and why they did it, because they'd done it before. The reason why Sheamus will never get his yes movement is not only because he's been normalized and just he's been just a part of the furniture for so long. One of the key reasons is that when Sheamus was in that pushed project phase in 2012 and 13 as the big, let's make him a superstar baby face, is that he was as much of a knob as Riddle. He was a total bully, yeah, total arsehole, just doing things without no compunction. Nothing was done to him. He just did things to other people because Vince McMahon is such an unlikable knobhead that he just simply cannot recognize decent values in people. And when decent values in people somehow seep through this awful polish of a WWE system, he goes, well, that's not my idea, so I'm not going to do it. Daniel Bryan, Becky Lynch, until the fans defy me, and it's untenable not to do that. On the match itself, like, it's not just this sort of electrifying physicality that just shakes you from this numbed stupor that is the experience of watching Raw. Like, this was like, without much of an in-depth storyline sort of informed by like loads of angles and promos and what you like this was just quality building and intra-match storytelling and craft. Just the way, for example, that Riddle like kicked Sheamus all the way out of the ring after a struggle to then do the floating bro. It didn't feel like, all right, okay, it's time for me to do my high spot. Like, they just, in little small nuanced details, like, Sheamus is as good now cerebrally as he is physically in terms of constructing these matches. Like, it's really, really worthy work. And I really hope, for all of the reasons, that he beats the piss out of Riddle and gets an actual, quote, WrestleMania moment.
Did like the tweet he sent out overnight. So they tweeted the graphic of like, oh, it's official, Riddle versus Sheamus, the United States Championship. I think it's the Sunday of WrestleMania that's going down, which is good. And Sheamus quote tweeted BT Sport WWE saying, predicting hashtag match of mania because I deliver more bangers than a German butcher. So, I mean, come on, just give him the bloody title right now. Right. Oh, I've been looking forward to this. Next up, we had Kevin Patrick catching up with Shane McMahon and Elias and Jackson Ryker backstage and saying, oh, can you tell us anything more about the expose? Utterly pointless, this, because he went, yep, yeah, tell you in a sec. And then it happened. The next segment. What the was the point of that? But anyway, they're in the ring. Shane says, oh, I didn't actually have a knee injury, but it got better. And ran away because of adrenaline. I'll be fine in time to beat Strowman at Mania. And they did the whole, oh, it's, and the commentators are like, oh, it's going to be Brains versus Braun. I was like, piss off. So then his expose is a report card from when he was in the fifth grade, I think it was. They flashed it up on screen and Shane went through it. I've got it here in front of me. It's got a sticker on it that just says, needs improvement. And it's, as I mentioned earlier, it's signed by Mrs. Strowman. Or Mr. Strowman. No, it's just a bloody squiggle. Social studies, D-. Braun is a disruptive influence on those around him, often instigating fights with his peers. Ooh, that was ominous. Math, D-. Braun has displayed a lack of basic problem-solving skills. I would suggest Braun Strowman be held back a year. Why would you put his entire name on there? But okay. English, D. English, D. Braun has
performed... I would suggest that the monster among men is held back a year.
Yeah. English, D. Braun has fallen behind his classmates. Summer school may be necessary. Gym, D+. Good train noise. No, he didn't say that part. But yeah, it was just... he went through it and they put up a... I really nearly swore then. They put up a Photoshop of Braun Strowman wearing a dunce cap with the words 2 + 2 = 5 and then I'm not stupid written 3 times underneath. And then Strowman interrupted ahead of his match with Jackson Ryker. Before the match with Ryker, Sige, I'd love to know what went through your mind watching this. And, you know, I mean, which is better, Raw Well, AW Dynamite. It's in my eyes.
Strowman's writing with the chalk was astonishingly legible and really elegantly done, considering he was like, what, fifth America, stupid with its bloody years in school. I'm a sophomore. What year are you in? How old are you? So I don't know how old he is, but regardless.
Moving on, chairman of the school board, AJ Styles.
It's for normal people, it's year six, apparently. So he's
10, right, okay. Well, my writing's never been as good as that. So well done, Braun, for your astonishing craft. Almost as good as Jerry Lawler's handwriting. Have you seen Jerry Lawler's handwriting before?
No.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And I know that he's got great. Yeah. And I know he's got, do you wonder why I've got such intimate knowledge of his handwriting? It's because he tried to defame the accusers in the old legal bother he was in by saying, oh, they slept with black man and all sorts. So that's how I know.
God.
That's how I know.
Thank you, David Bixlersman, for learning what Jerry Lawler's handwriting looks like.
Hamflet, anything you want to say before we get to the match?
Where was the report card for pottery class? Because when he got these hands, he was getting an A. So what you've seen here is the things at school he can't do well versus the things he can. It's like Shane is only telling one side of the story. Come on, WWE. That was rubbish, wasn't it? It's poorly performed trash, like most of the storyline. And again, like to try and offer a bit of critical analysis, why is it that when Shane McMahon does something where he kind of alludes to Braun being stupid or he accuses him of being thick or whatever, Braun then follows up in a way that only enhances how thick he is? We're going to get to the stipulation reveal, the fact that he yet again didn't get his hands on Shane McMahon. Like, Shane's always right. Braun's stupid. Like, that's like, there was the one with the car the other week, like where he just he chases a car on foot and then Shane just appears. What, he barely left the building. That guy's pretty stupid. He is. Like, I'm with you with the money.
Is this the worst era for catchphrases, by the way, in WWE?
It's the worst era.
Well, yeah. we've got correct, and he really loves Braun. I have to say, you know what? Elements of this are growing on me, like a fungus, but they are growing on me. Like when Braun Strowman got out of the ring in this match, I went, oh, here it bloody comes. Choo-choo. And the commentators are like, oh, here's WWE's answer to Snowpiercer. What? So, yeah, the match went like 2 minutes.
Was that in the report? Where was that? Like, well, he's rubbish at all his classes, but he can summon a train noise with just his hands. So I can see why he's not that arsed about learning. Like, the...
Just the worst crap. Just the absolute dirt worst, utter dog crap.
And, I mean, why didn't he summon that in the swamp? That would have thrown Bray off, wouldn't it? Choo-choo! Oh, my God, there's a train in the swamp.
Oh, crikey.
Yeah, he won with a power slam. And then he chased after Shane. Couldn't catch him because he's an idiot. And then Elias...
Thomas the Tank Engine with a fiend face.
How do you botch a squash match with, I expect, like, at least a combined decade in the WWE Performance Center? All right, I've answered my question.
So, yeah, Elias cuts him off when he's chasing after Shane with a knee strike. They triple team him. He does the whole exploding thing. And then he cuts a very out of breath promo. Shane, maybe they're so similar, that's the problem. Because Shane would have had flashbacks at any time he has to speak in a ring when Braun was cutting the promo. He was so out of bloody breath. But he said, oh, did you forget? Now I get to pick the stipulation. And he announced a cage match between the two of them. And my favourite bit of all this is MVP going, whoa. Well, Shane isn't smiling anymore. Cut to Shane smiling. Brilliant. Well done, everyone.
The old Shane McMahon doesn't smile much anymore.
if only, like, they should invent this, really. If only WWE had, like, a steel structure that Shane McMahon couldn't escape out of. But they don't, so we can't have that. It's a steel cage. Steel cage is the best thing Braun could do to try and keep Shane, like, from getting away. If only. If only that structure was something that people actually want to watch Shane McMahon in, because they just like to see him jump off ice stuff. But they don't, so never mind. Steel cage it is.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Right, let's get to a highlight of Monday Night Raw, which came next. The Dirt Sheet with Miz and Morrison. I really quite enjoyed this, I've got to be honest. Hey, Hey, Hop Hop is on regular rotation now in the Wilborn house, and I've even written some of the lyrics down. So basically, they did their unbearable stuff in advance. Although I did like Morrison's line about, my hair's so big because he's had so many secrets.
Did half-decent irreverent comedy, that?
Yeah. They talked about, they said, oh, he's nominated for a VMA. We're going to win a VMA, basically. He was nominated for a VMA, but he didn't win it. And Morrison went, he did win a Grammy, though. And Miz went, it's another point. Shut up. Talked about beating Bad Bunny at WrestleMania. And they introduced their new music video, filmed in their words, San Juan, Puerto Rico. Didn't look like it. I've got to be honest. It looked like a lot of green screen and the shots of the Thunderdome, if I'm perfectly honest. But honestly, they were spitting straight fire. Word up, right? Here's some of the lines they said. The Miz said, you ain't no G like Bugs, Peter and Roger Rabbit. You should be kissing their paws for luck, damn it. Oh, got him! Right, and then Morrison followed that up with, didn't your cousin lose a race to a tortoise? Yeah, we kick faster than Chuck Norris. This was spectacular, Hamlet.
It was all right. I liked the song, right, up until about the end of the first chorus. And it's evident that, well, hey, they've got 3 hours to fill, so they're always going to stretch stuff out. But whoever created this, Miz Morrison obviously had a hand in it, but let's assume there was other people in the company, like this too much, and the whole song was probably unnecessary. I got the point, you know, I got the point quite early on. I enjoyed it to a point. They pushed it way beyond the point I could keep enjoying it and keep laughing at it. They WWE this. This was okay. And then they kind of WWE'd it. Because I quite enjoy watching the Miz and Morrison riff a little bit, as if they've got that tiny bit of agency they once had when the Dirt Sheet was just that .com thing where nobody was watching. Like that Morrison line. This was okay to a point, but the video definitely went on way too long. I got the joke really quickly.
And as predicted on yesterday's preview, there was people today going, Miz was WWE champion 4 weeks ago. Now look at him in a bunny costume. That's the sodding point. That's the point. Yes, of course,
WWE bad point.
Put the title on him. But it's not like, oh, okay, it's like how much he's stopped. He's always been at that level. So Bad Bunny and Damian... Sorry, Sej, I didn't get your thoughts on this.
No, you didn't.
Fire.
The thoughts on the what?
The absolute fire.
Right, okay. It wasn't bad enough. It wasn't bad enough by half. I think this was terribly produced as a musical, like, bit thing. Could barely hear the lyrics at certain points. I think the mixing was piss poor. It wasn't bad enough. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't the... This might have worked, right, had the rest of WWE Raw been good. And there was a level of... good quality that the Miz and the Morrison, Bret Hart all of a sudden, I freaking knew it. The John Morrison, wrestles a bit too much like Shawn Michaels. It wasn't bad enough. And by that, I mean, it's quite a difficult point to articulate this. WWE Raw is so bad, so bad that nothing good can come from it. And it circles back on itself and nothing purposefully bad can come from it either. Like, they were aiming for so bad on purpose that you were to hate The Miz and Morrison for assaulting your eardrums with it. But it's absolutely, like, not at all dissimilar to literally everything else on the show. So it couldn't possibly get over as something bad that you resented for being bad when everything else on the show that tries to be good is in fact bad. It was just simply more bad, and it was poorly mixed. You can't do bad lines on purpose when you've got the baby faces saying even more lame things than trying to rhyme tortoise with Norris. It's just everything sucks, basically, is my overarching take.
I like the idea if that is what happened, and I get what your point is, and I agree with it is to a certain extent. Sage, the fact that they were like, well, we'll put this after the best thing on the show, which is obviously Shane McMahon presenting a fifth grade bloody report card. People obviously go, oh my God, how has he got his hands on that? And then they'll go, oh, well, this is all bollocks. They didn't actually film this music video in Puerto Rico. Jesus Christ. Anyway, Bad Bunny, Damian Priest, they come out. Priest says Bunny's going to handle Miz at WrestleMania. Bad Bunny says something in Spanish. Miz says, what did he say? And Priest said he's going to make Miz his bitch. I got a bingo. And
Two weeks. Drop the bitch twice in as many weeks as Bad. But bitch Bunny. That's what he is now.
So Miz and Morrison get out of the ring. And I did like the fact that Priest sort of gets in front of them. And then they go, oh, here we go. Like, hide muscle. Are you defending him? Steps out of the way. He goes, go on then. Miz walks up to Bad Bunny, who just proper chinned him. I thought that looked really good, to be fair. They hit the ring. Bad Bunny trashes the set of the dirt sheet, of course. And they dare them to get in the ring, but they don't. I thought this second half was really good. Again, Hamflet.
I think this is a decent celebrity angle. Honestly, I do. I think it's been reasonably built since the Rumble. It's been plotted well enough. You know, the musical guys come at the wrestler domain, so the wrestlers have gone at the musical domain. The answer to WWE's developmental issues at this point is clearly not warehousing a load of ex-indie guys in your nice gym. It's bringing people from outside the wrestling world and giving them about 2 months of training, because I think this punch looked tremendous. And I've got faith that Bad Bunny has got enough of a grasp of the basics with a total pro like The Miz to make this quite enjoyable. That's clearly the answer, is take amateurs and give them a really solid grasp of the basics and like use their pre-existing star power rather than trying to break down the stuff that people have built up in years of actual wrestling training. I've got more interest in Bad Bunny versus The Miz than I do half of the like solid worker stuff across these two nights.
Post-match was good. I'd admit it. Post-match was good, and I'm bang up for the match. Like, they will genuinely put together a video package where before this and you think, this is canny good mid-card WrestleMania fare. Mm. There we go. LFG is what I'll be saying.
We had a promo. Oh, this was the bad promo. I loved the Alexa Bliss, not for the right reasons again, but I loved the Alexa Bliss promo for what came at the end. But this was the other promo. Passion from Randy Orton. I can say that, but here at What Culture, we're not exactly invested in the spooky bollocks that they've got going on here. Randy Orton ran down a list of the legends that he's encountered in his career, but he said none of them compared to The Fiend. You're not bloody kidding. He said he tried burning The Fiend, only to realise he wasn't human. He was an abomination straight from hell. He said he's glad to finally learn what he's dealing with so he can finally put an end to this. He said, we're cut from the same cloth. I now know how far into hell I'll have to reach to ensure the Fiend is out of his life once and for all, Michael Sidgwick.
I've got no words. I've literally got no words about this. Just him trying to sell the fact that he's having a fight with demonic Hellspawn. Give us a break.
Randy Orton reaching into hell is what he would do before he'd shake a writer's hand. I love this. I know what I need to do now. Tell me, please, because I don't think it's going to be a backbreaker or an RKO. You burned him alive. Like, I want to know. I want to know what Orton has figured out as a way to stop this guy. Like, is he going to set fire to Alexa Bliss? Because he's realised that everything about The Fiend is burned apart from his heart.
And I'll tell you what, if they do set fire to Alexa Bliss in a stunt similar to TLC, I guarantee there'll be thousands upon thousands of WWE fans who type into Google, where can I get one of those dolls?
I like the idea. He goes, I've tried RKOing him, tried punting him, tried burning him alive, but I haven't tried a chin lock. So that's what's going to be happening 2 weeks at WrestleMania.
Reach into hell and get the same drape and DDT he's been using in the exact same minute of every single 18-minute pay-per-view match.
I've been doing my research. I've been watching Ghostbusters and I got my own ectoplasm coming for a shape for you, fiend. That's what's going to happen.
If you could burn a sports entertainer from the ground up, you'd have the fiend.
Bobby Lashley faced Shelton Benjamin next. Benjamin actually got near fall. I did like, I don't know whether this is intentional or not. So Benjamin catches Lashley with his finisher, Payder. And they go, oh my God, he's in with the finisher. One, two, kick out. It cut to MVP. And he could have not looked less arsed in terms of like, oh, this is a near fall on the WWE champion less than 2 weeks before WrestleMania. He was like, yeah, he was always going to kick out of that. I mean, think about all the stuff he kicked out of his blood of bollocks. So Benjamin does get some offense in, hits him with some knee strikes after that. But Lashley hits him with a couple of spine busters, hurt lock. Benjamin passes out. And yeah. Bobby Lashley still looks very strong heading into WrestleMania. Anything you want to say about this, Sid?
Not particularly.
No.
It's a nothing match.
Yeah, you can't exactly luxuriate on Lashley looking that strong, can you, when it's as a result of like this confusing and difficult to pass storyline. If he's going over another mid-carder and looking awesome, or an upper mid-carder, then ideal. But this wasn't really that, was it? This was tied to something else.
So Kofi and Xavier bump into AJ Styles and Big George backstage. They've got a game night set up because they want to see how well they know each other. Styles said, no, let's just get on with the match tonight. And they called him a chicken, so he obviously accepted. The highlight of this bit was just the constant plugs that Xavier Woods had on that sheet. They had like a sign that says, we miss Big E. There was plugs for the Up, Up, Down, Down. There was plugs for their podcast. And there's plugs for the brilliant Our Heroes Rock Kickstarter, which Big E is, of course, heavily a part of. Still going to support that. We support it here at What Culture, of course, ourheroesrock.org. Go and support it because it's a fantastic cause. And Big E is just a top bloke, as are the rest of the New Day. So then we got the New Day game night. They had all these games set up in the ring. They had Uno, they had Jenga, but they were mainly just there to play charades. What do you call it, Sig?
Charades.
I call it the most hellish part of Christmas Day.
So they have to mime a thing. The first one was, I think, 1,000 Miles by Vanessa Carlton. Pretty impressive that they managed to get that, if I'm perfectly honest.
It's in America, and it never will be.
Styles had to do the Lion King, and Big George just stared at him. He was trying his best. Oh, crown on the head, lifting the line up there. Nothing. We've all had those sorts of partners, as you mentioned, Hamplot on Christmas Day with the family.
We once played Pictionary before you have kids and you do the, oh, let's be adults and have like dinner parties. And played Pictionary, another couple once. And so they got swordfish, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in the correct order, her fella drew, in the correct order, drew a sword and then a fish. She kept saying, fish sword. Just absolutely buckled. Fish sword.
Coming to cinemas this summer, Hugh Jackman, Halle Berry, fish sword. Fish sword.
Absolutely popped my tits off.
Right, anyway, so they have Pictionary. There's just like quite a lot easier.
The Family Guy running gag, that one, isn't it? Where like a box on the screen. It's a jackal.
Woods drew a rocket ship and Kingston guessed it. Styles had to draw the sun. What is this, kids' Pictionary? Anyway, Big George just looked at him, didn't guess it. New Day celebrated, and then Big George just says, look, it doesn't really matter. All we have to do is win our WrestleMania. But I thought Omos came across great here. And then they obviously Styles throws a fit because he just can make anything work. And they get the match. Xavier Woods versus Styles. It went to a DQ because after a back and forth, Fireman's Carry Neckbreaker from Styles, Tornado DDT for a near fall from Woods. Woods looks like he's going for a running kick on the apron, almost blocks him, hoys him into the ring, DQ. Kingston goes after him, almost just catches him, flings him over the barricade, and then Styles throws Xavier Woods into Big Jaw, power bombs him, and then stands over him with his foot on the chest. Nice bit of old school, that Hamflet.
Yeah, I like this angle. I wish this was taking place on NXT because that brand could really do with this. The New Day are like daft comedy guys, but have over and over and over again lulled their opponents into a false sense of security by using daft comedy. They fool their opponents into thinking they're not a serious threat, and then they inevitably beat them. Here, they're trying to pretend they're not fazed by the fact that Omos is going to kill them by himself. AJ Styles has always been really good at this particular character trait, this bumbling buffoon, who then can wrestle, and you're almost shocked all over again that he's as good as he is because he's such a clown in the segment prior to it. Just this whole thing works for me, and I'm genuinely interested in the eventual payoff and the likely win for AJ and Omos at WrestleMania. Like this, like honestly, I know some people think it's like too cute or too childish for its own good, but it's all about context, and this one pretty much end to end has worked for me.
You shouldn't have to be reminded that AJ Styles is a killer in the ring. Like you should be anticipating how much of a killer he is. Like it was objectively terrible. But it was something that I subjectively delighted in because this is people say like advanced against WWE this lot. You'll literally not listen, not just Hamflet's take, but the mind that's going to follow to a more generous assessment of this segment. Absolutely pitiful in terms of match promotion. Like unless you're an absolute mutant, just with these initials seared into your head and blindly accepting that everything they do is great because they're the biggest and whatever. Like everyone would like this is bad. Objectively terrible. You can't get excited about this match. You'll be happy when it arrives and you'll enjoy the levity on Raw that builds to it, but you're not going to spend that all-important week, that would, in theory, like look at AEW Revolution. I know the show itself wasn't as good as the hype, but that week is so awesome as a pro wrestling fan. I just luxuriate in the anticipation. You'll never get that with a segment like this. And yet, AJ Styles just delights me. Just absolutely delights me. Like, and again, it's just the same old story. Drek material elevated by people you like and who are good at doing bad things, and wouldn't be so much better if they were doing like much better things to this. I just, AJ Styles, look at the pause and everything. Like, to explain, it's just fun. I was delighted by AJ Styles, but this is objectively absolutely horrendous match promotion.
Yeah, like you say, Styles knocked anything out of the pot. Do you reckon there was, I mean, was there a chance that they went, AJ has to draw the earth?
I was just going to say that. They should have ribbed him by having him draw the earth and him just doing a straight line with him, some spotlights on it, because that's apparently what they think. Oh, a straight line with a glass dome and some spotlights just to light it up a little bit like the stars in the night.
They were both like so close, a rocket ship in the sun. Like they were skirting around it, and nobody quite had the guts to be like, should we just rip the piss out of him and tell him?
I know what the earth looks like.
I know that on day one, God created the heaven and the earth, but what was he doing before? I see BC written down everywhere. What was he doing before BC?
Question that the great philosophers have asked for years.
I'd love to know what Sid thinks of what came next. Alexa was in her playground. She had a jack in the box. She was talking about how they used to be known as the devil in a box. She said Orton thought he could get rid of the fiend, but he was just weakened. And now she's got a fiend in a box. She said, I don't know. It says Orton
does that. There's a lot of fiends who want to be in a box. Like,
there's a lot of fiends that replies. Have a box on Twitter.
Hamflet, I don't know if you were on Twitter last night, but they tweeted this thing with Alexa Bliss and the makeup and the full gimmick. Alexa Bliss wants to play with you. And there's literally people in the plaza going, so she pins me like she did. She actually sits on my cack. It's essentially.
God.
What my thoughts on this segment? Wilborn.
No, I'm getting to it. Please let me get to the thing. So she says Orton doesn't know what's next, but at WrestleMania, the legend killer dies, and she plays the toy, and the fiend pops out, and then it zooms out, and the fiend's on the swing next to her.
Hasn't got, like, he no longer has, his fingers have been, like, fattened by the fire. I don't know how that works. Like, if anything, he should be a skeleton if he's been brought back. But his fingers, the opposite, he's the opposite of a charred skeleton with the, like, the flesh charred off. His fingers have somehow got fatter. I don't know how he's going to grab a hold. It's going to be very hard for him to grab a hold. My thoughts on the segment was that I was, and I still might do it, really debating, like, MP4 clipping the fiend in the box coming out and saying WWE fans when they watch a grown woman play hopscotch. I've got an erection. It looks like a Jack in the Box. Can you sit on my cock? Like I did at Fastlane. Sit on my cock. Sit on my cock next.
Cock off in a box.
Cock in a box, eh? Fiend in a box. I saw a lot of them. So I'm currently debating whether it's worth getting quote tweeted into oblivion by nonces. God, if AEW had a paedophile like that, so I absolutely wouldn't.
I'm picturing this AEW debuted a paedophile character on Dark. I'm curious to see if he gets on Dynamite or not. Oh God, that moment where the fiend's on the swing. It's the visual accompaniment I've been waiting for years off the back of that. And like Cedric always did this better than me, so I'm going to butcher it. But that noise he did when he was in a wedding dress that time. All I was waiting for was this noise. On Follow Fiend's Mind, we talk about him all the time on Twitter. Follow Fiend's Mind. When he does that, there's a tweet where he's like, listen to my band. And it's a MIDI of a Metallica song. And then at the end, you just hear him go, like that. All this visual of the burning fiend on the swing was missing. Was that brain noise?
What I love about it, right, is that it's legitimately Jessica Walter died very sadly recently. Lucille Bluth in Arrested Development. That show was incredible. And this not incredible show reminded me of that incredible show in the worst possible ways. It's become a sitcom trope, and much like Jean Parmesan, I'll pop for it every single time, where there's two characters in a situation, right? And one of the characters is burying an off-screen character, except the camera pans out to reveal that he sat there. And Pop was talking about Buster Bluth, who's just like the run of the litter, just as the weird kid son who's just like, just this absolutely hapless tosser. And Pop says, you know, Buster was just a turd, you know? And then pans out and Buster's there. And it's like, they were meant to think, oh my God, how scary is the fiend? He's there all along. And it's the pan reveal. And I pissed myself laughing. Look at this state of him, man.
The only way this would have been better if he'd been in one of those, you know, they're like the child swing with the leg holes. that would have been...
And just one of his fingers just manages to fit through.
Right, this is the point where Drew McIntyre had enough of no one attacking him backstage. So he walked into the locker room and went, come on then, let's have it out. Who wants to have a fight? Come on, let's have a fight. And he's bollocking everyone. Big baby face energy, this. Oh, what are you doing? Tweeting on your phone? Oh, that's the only thing people do to try and get noticed anymore. Come on, someone have a go. Come on. Goes up to Braun Strowman and goes, oh, you should be a 5-time champion by now. Oh, why don't you fight me? And he goes, well, come on, play pool with Shane McMahon, brother. But after that, I'll be seeing you after WrestleMania. Nice to see Humberto Carrillo pop up. Come on, Humberto, let's have it out. Come on, take a swing. No, gets in Riddle's face. Riddle goes, oh, no, I'm busy, really busy, mate. Angel Garza goes, right, bollocks, I'll have this. Tries to attack him. And McIntyre just goes, hey, and throws him out the way. Poor Drew Gulak gets emasculated as well. And then headbutted. And then Ricochet's just there. And he goes, fancy it? And Ricochet goes, well, I don't trust Lashley, but if you're looking for a fight, I'll see you out there. And McIntyre goes, good. What was this pamphlet?
What this was that Bobby Lashley's put a bounty on the Wealdstone Raider. That's what this was. Like,
have a bare knuckle fight then.
Just awful. awful, awful, awful. We were quite kind to the bounty thing on the review yesterday. The idea that if this is all, you know, the suggestion that we made was that the 24/7 geeks is like a red herring, isn't it? Like Drew's supposed to be panicked by these losers, but in reality, somebody is going to take advantage of this bounty, and that somebody's going to be a big deal, big star. Like Curb Your Enthusiasm music incoming, but like that's gonna be like a Brock Lesnar type figure. That's, oh my god, like why were you panicking about the 24/7 goobers? Just this was a leap too far in the other direction of trying to make Drew seem too clever for it all. Like by selling, it's like that whole thing you hear about wrestlers: well, if you get ribbed, just don't sell it, and then you probably won't get ribbed again. Like Drew was just selling this. Like Bobby Lashley is in his head. Because he wasted part of his day to go in and front up to these dorks, like they can't even roll up R-Truth, and he's panicking about them. Like that, how do they not realize that that looks worse on Drew McIntyre than just because he happens to like be a tough talking hard nut? Like it looks worse on him for even acknowledging any of this, for lowering himself to this nonsense storytelling.
Like as you said, perfectly pointed out, like the level of guys he was in effect selling for as people who could conceivably batter him with a cheap shot of the 24/7 geeks. We can remember the days, the Halcyon days, where we were worried that, oh, you know, Drew McIntyre, he's like, he's a top babyface star. And somehow they've made him one. But there's another guy who's coming across as a really good babyface, even though he's a heel. Who are they going to cheer for? The answer now is no one.
Yeah. They're going to cheer for Daniel Bryan and they're going to, oh, we're coming the wrong night. Oh, like,
it's pathetic. They're just crap. Well, it just came across as such a tosser. I just such an absolutely over-aggressive tosser punching down on like absolutely impotent threats. It's just pathetic. This show's pathetic. And when people like actual journals on Twitter will go, oh, why does this happen on Raw? Oh God, I don't like it when this happens on Raw. Can we stop it happening, please? This is bad. Pass it on. The reason why is because it's all completely and utterly dead as something that people think can sometimes be good. No. It's because this guy in charge kind of lost it up here.
Sorry, so have you not done your journalism homework here? Spoiler alert, Ricochet's a good wrestler. McIntyre on Monday Night Raw.
That was followed by Naomi versus Shayna Baszler.
Skip.
Oh, thank Christ.
I literally forget who Mandy Brooke's partner is sometimes, you know. Mandy Rose. Oh, I got it. Who's good? Who's strong? Who's challenging who? Who got beat last week? It's all a complete mess.
Didn't Nia Jax squash Naomi in like 60 seconds the other week?
Yeah.
And she rolled up Shayna Baszler here after just all of the distractions.
And then they've got more pressing concerns that we need to talk about later on the show.
The worst thing is, bloody Reginald has just given the game away. They say the apron's the hardest part of the ring. The hardest part of the ring, right? People get slammed into it, and because it's been sold and you know the realities, it's like, oh yeah, they probably shouldn't be taking that many bumps. He does a senton bump and he just doesn't sell it. It's like, oh, the gimmick, there must be gimmick in it. Because he was fine. Yeah, that was hard as nails.
Well, anyway, enough of all that. It's now time for this.
It's short, it's crap, it's wrestling related. The 5-star review review.
Nailed it! And this week's 5-star review is brought to you by Yep Wrestling. If you want to suggest something short, crap and wrestling related for us to review instead of a god-awful Monday Night Raw segment, all you need to do is subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on iTunes and leave us a 5-star review on there. Yep Wrestling writes, just thank you. You guys are amazing, all of you. You get me through a lot of my humdrum days at work. So many times I've been having a bad day and I'll put this on and relax, turning my day around. Although my wife is getting a little over my random comments or phrases I pull from the show. But that aside, I keep being so freaking amazing. As for a 5-star review, I say let Hamfler or Sidgwick choose. Hamfler, I'll let you pick this week because we want to honour someone who's having a very special day today.
Yeah. See, this is why we do the earnest bit and then we kind of rip the piss out of a part of his career, so I feel a bit guilty. James Storm is going to have his 1,000th match for Impact Wrestling / TNA. And as a once quite loyal TNA fan, a foolish believer that somehow the quality of the work in TNA was going to provide a threat to WWE's monopoly, if not their business practices. I loved Beer Money. I loved America's Most Wanted. Loved the Cowboy James Storm at various points. So, of course, for the five-star review, we've gone to about 5 years past that point. Mm. 5 years past all of those peaks. And indeed, 5 years past Impact's peaks, TNA's peaks as well. It was very much becoming that show that sadly was becoming the gag wrestling show. The, just the thing that people didn't watch. The thing people didn't have time for, because even if you weren't watching WWE, you'd at this point well discovered New Japan Pro Wrestling in like the greatest period of its booking, you know, sort of legacy, I guess, what we can call it now, because it's past tense. The indies were booming. So just Impact didn't really have a place. And James Storm did, because he was an Impact original and a TNA original and that, but he was in the middle of trying to form a revolution group. He wasn't the Cowboy really anymore. He'd hypnotized Sanada at one point when he was on his New Japan excursion to turn on the Great Muta. He was a cult leader type figure. However, when he bumped into Mickie James, who was in Impact, it wasn't about turning her and making her join the revolution. He wasn't a bad guy with Mickie James. He was her friend. They were both from Tennessee. They both like country music. He just wanted to be a mate. It wasn't about trying to fool her into joining the revolution. It was just an earnest friendship until he showed his true colours in just one of the most infamously Impact ways imaginable.
So they are sat somewhere and James Storm says, "Howdy, I want you to join me on my journey." And Mickie James
says, "The center of the earth." Oh, wait a minute.
Mickie James says, "After we've been friends all this time, you know this is something that I would never, ever do. I'm sorry that you misread this, but you're my friend, and I thought that's what this was. If it's not what this is, then I'm sorry. I appreciate it, but I got to go, seriously." James Storm says, "I just thought this was something that you..."
The thought.
Thought. What was you doing with thought?
Something that could help you, and obviously I was wrong, and it's my fault, and I apologize. This is your decision, and like I told you, little lady, before, whatever you decide, as a friend, I'm going to stand behind you, okay? They agree, and they walk out, and they're walking on at a train station. Is it Amphlett?
Mm-hmm.
They're walking at a train station. Storm's boasting about something. I've rewound it about like 10 times. I've no idea what he's talking about. He's talking about trains and airports and the weather. And then he goes, "Looks like the train's bullet." And Mickie James goes, "What train? Train?" He goes, "Was that your phone?" He says, "No, don't think so." He says, "Are you sure? I think your phone's ringing." And she goes, "Be serious." She says, James, look, it's not my phone." She gets her phone, puts it in his face, and he goes, "I got that same phone." Then he pushes her off the platform onto the tracks in front of an oncoming train and laughs. Amphlett, just give us the quick backstory. When I said I'll pick something for this, how you sent this to us? Because
what I just said. Well, it's got to be the time that he pushed Mickie James in front of a moving train.
He sent us the clip timestamp just at the moment. He just goes, "I got their same phone." She goes, "Ah!" And you get pushed in front of a train.
This was, I mean, you know, this is, it feels tame by 2021, doesn't it? When, like, you know, we joked about Randy Orton. We're like, what can you possibly do? You've burned the guy alive. This was that back then. Like, oh, like the idea that Mickie James would say, "And at this match, at this pay-per-view, I'm going to get revenge on you pushing me in front of a moving train that, by the way, gave her a concussion." You know, it just, they didn't care. I think they were looking for something viral. It sort of worked, but TNA/Impact had misjudged how little people already thought of their product by this point. It was too much of a laughing stock for it to be the kind of thing where, like, oh my God, I've got to tune in to next week's Impact. It was, oh, so Impact are pushing women in front of trains now, are they? Like, very different, like, broader reactions to this visual. It was a tag match. You had, like, Storm and Serena Deeb versus...
A match. Yeah, yeah. Burned him alive, pushed him in front of a train, and then I had a match.
Yeah, the pay-per-view. You know, like, that's it. It's the, can we just let the wrestlers wrestle now? We've done the pushing in front of the train stuff. This was Serena Deeb's entryway into Impact Wrestling for a bit alongside Storm against Mickie James and her husband, Nick Aldis Magnus at the time.
Just like he says, he goes, boy, that's a long way down. You made your decision, and I made mine.
Gilliatt.
And so, as always, we go to the comment section. Once again, these do not reflect the views of myself, the Daddy Boys, or anyone at What Culture Wrestling. Aaron Gillen writes, more of this, please. That was a great segment. So, Christian Charles just writes, he wants to make two valid points here. Mickie James is hot. This whole line of TNA is interesting.
What's it all like in?
Mickie James is hot. This storyline in TNA is interesting.
You've got a woman getting pushed in front of the train, and that fan's reaction is to do that, like that Lenny face from The Simpsons.
So S. Scott, I like this. This is one of the TNA hardcores I sense. Trying to, presumably, because I'm looking through the comments, like you say, I'm putting people are like, is this what happens when Smashing Pumpkins get put in charge? Basically, is that what they're saying, right? S. Scott goes, I guarantee this is just a TNA version of the tweets you presumably get quite a lot, Sidge. Guys, to be fair, he is a cult leader, and cult leaders aren't nice people, and they do kill people.
At the end.
They aren't nice people and they do kill people. Although I think he just injured her really badly. So
probably because she ain't dead. She's on Raw.
Slightly concerning comment here from Nino. I remember in Red Dead Redemption, I would hogtie women and drag them to the train tracks and watch them get run over. I even got an achievement for it, smiley face.
Why always women?
Right. And then there was this comment, and it's a two-part of this. I was going to include this anyway, and then I read the comment replying to it. And, Hypnosis V1 Games writes, hashtag, bring back Samuel Shaw. We can't escape him, lads. Just for anyone who's unaware, Hamlet, who's Samuel Shaw?
It's Dexter Lumis. NXT are reading Impact Wrestling's comment sections to book.
But the thing that really makes this, Sidge, is the comment that comes from Sakuku2, who replies to the comment, hashtag bring back Samuel Shaw, which has got 30 upvotes, to be fair.
30, great. I do my tweets if they don't get that much.
So they write, here's a hot MILF getting killed and you think about Samuel effing Shaw. What the F is wrong with you?
What's wrong with him?
What's wrong with him?
He's getting killed and everything. I want to get the tag for the FBI.
So thank you to Yet Wrestling and congratulations to James Storm.
Like that was a match, legitimately amazing. Sorry, we took the piss out of that angle to celebrate it.
Anyway, where are we on Monday Night Raw? Oh yeah, a segment that's probably going to be a 5-star review in a few years' time. Riddle's walking by stage with Asuka, and he walks up to him and he goes, "Huh, like the old scooter, do you? You got these scooters and do you have the scooters and do you know what? I forgot the line." Just walks off. Asuka's face. Honestly, search for this on Twitter because someone screenshot like the four faces that Asuka pulls. It is, it's an absolute picture. This, I had to sort of rewatch this about four times to realize what had happened. Insane, this segment, Sidge. But hey, we're alive, pal.
Such a shame that Matt Riddle's no longer remotely endearing Because I would have loved something like this were he not Matt Riddle. But only Matt Riddle could do it. So, you know what I mean? Like, an actual sense of spontaneity where he's just decided, can't remember, there's no saving this whatsoever. It's kind of very him thing to do, this absolute stoner idiot. Yeah, I wish I could have been delighted by this. Like, I would have been delighted by this in 2019. I'd have been loving this in 2019. Somehow, this perfect accident, the likes of which WWE's system, like, contrives, that simply can't happen. I wish I could have, like, enjoyed it.
Evidence, again, that capitalism doesn't work because this company hasn't made billions from years and years and years of elegantly built pay-per-views, but from television rights by making television like this, by making television in a way that this can happen. And this is what they get their billions for. This is what NBC have just gotten into the biggest ever WWE bed with this. Like, this is their system. This is how they do it to ensure that stuff like this never happens. And it happens like this.
I just love the idea. Because it was Riddle, wasn't it, who in NXT, they went, oh, here's your promo. And he went, no, I'll just wing it. And he's like, Triple H is like, bloody hell, that was amazing. The more of that.
The one that got the Broserweights over in one promo.
Yeah. That's it. And yeah, even like, this is personification of like, you know, this is a Riddle character turned up to 11 in Vince McMahon's eyes. But even he can't remember. He's probably just on the notes. He's trying to rack his brains what his central point of this promo was to ask her, presumably just to show her, and then because Rhea Ripley came straight after it. The central point was stoner bollocks involving a scooter again and Japan. And it was probably something mildly offensive that Vince had written. And he thought, you know what? I can't remember the exact wording. And if I try and wing it, I'm just going to get into even more trouble here. So he just went, I can't remember. Bye. I did. Have you all seen the clip of MVP on Raw Talk with Riddle, by the way?
Yeah, he takes a piss.
Good stuff, this. I did like the bit that followed it immediately afterwards as well, because obviously what they're trying to do is be like, here's Asuka, Raw Women's Champion, here's number one contender, Rhea Ripley, and they're going to have the contract signing in just a second. So they had that, and the bit that followed almost made me laugh more, because they went, who's the shortest, fattest guy we can find to stand next to Rhea Ripley? Right, there we go, you, stand there next to Rhea Ripley and make her look big. That was it. That was all they showed. And then we got the contract signing. They came out. Rhea Ripley did look amazing here because it's Rhea sodding Ripley at the end of the day. She said Asuka was the current champion. Asuka laughs and does her usual shtick here. She said that Rhea Ripley was overconfident. And Ripley said, yeah, well, I am pretty confident. I came in on my first night and challenged you to a title match at WrestleMania, which I'm going to win. They both signed the contract. Asuka says Ripley's confidence is borrowed and not earned. I was terrified they were going to go, do you remember when you lost at last year's WrestleMania? But thankfully they didn't at this point, at least. Asuka's about to say Ripley's not ready for her. And then Ripley just flips the table into Asuka's face. And then Michael Hamlet's fantasy booking, not in a, I hope this happened. Yeah, I'm going to go, don't worry. But and by that, I mean, predicted what was going to happen. Not, I really hope this happens. Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. Shayna Baszler, who, let's not forget, had just got rolled up in 2 sodding minutes by Naomi. They come out. They say, oh, we've dominated Raw for the past year. Where's our Mania match? And she said, I can kick Asuka's. Remember when I kicked Asuka's teeth out? I'll give you a taste of that, Ripley. And Ripley, whilst Asuka's just selling on the floor, just grabbing her face, goes, yeah, all right, we'll have a tag match next week. Ooh, awkward bedfellows. Hamlet, you booked this. What do you reckon?
I didn't want to see it coming exactly as it did. This booking, it's not, I don't want to pin this on Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax because it shouldn't sound like some sort of like personal assassination on them. This booking has already ruined one women's title match. So it's going to ruin another women's title match. It's going to suck all the heat out of it because the booking of the women's divisions has been absolutely criminal over the last few months. Absolutely criminal. It's not getting anywhere enough criticism that it should be doing. And this is just another part of that. Bang into Rhea Ripley, by the way, before all of it. Felt like I cleared up any confusion I might have had last week about who she is. She's confident and she's cocky and believes in herself. And there's less of that kind of deer in the headlights, oh, I lost last year, I'm going to make up for it this year. Like, I support them going with this Rhea Ripley. Like, even if the gimmick is trying to fake it until she makes it because she knows what happened last year. Even if it's that, I'm more in favour of that and her just having the confidence to power through and beat Asuka. And then they were made to look so stupid. Asuka was made to look so stupid selling that table for so long while we got this long laboured promo from the tag champions.
I did like it when Nia Jax did the Rhea Ripley stamp, though. That did pop me, I'll give you that.
That was all right, yeah. Her improvs are pretty funny sometimes, obviously. Like, the, it's just the matches, Ming and the bookings, but we've seen it. Like, Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair's exchange on SmackDown was really good. If nothing else, because they've got, like, 2 weeks to repair the damage that this booking did to that angle. And now, on the go-home Raw, they're going to deploy it again. Like, staggeringly incompetent. Like, I said this on the preview because it was just the easiest thing to take the piss out of the booking for, because I just couldn't think of a way that they would get out of this contract signing. And they've done it. They've actually done it with one Raw left to go. Like, Asuka and Rhea Ripley are going to lose. Oh, what, like, they can't be separated. See you at WrestleMania. Unnecessary.
Just as well having a match. Just as well having a match then, isn't it?
Yeah, minging.
What's the point? I just don't understand the point of this at all. I thought every single part of this bit of television was actively horrendous, other than she ate that table so much that halfway excused how long she was down for, halfway. I thought Rhea Ripley was not good in her verbal delivery at all, to be honest. I think she's playing a heel. She's certainly unlikable enough to be one. I just didn't rate her delivery. I hate all of it. I hate all of it. It's just the kind of stuff that has me just... I understand that a lot of people are very stupid and very dumb, but I'm thinking, how dumb can you possibly be to like this enough to be horrible to me online? You know what I mean? It just has me like think I'm taking crazy pills.
MVP had a chat with Ricochet before his match. Business chat.
Nearly the end.
Nearly there. We're nearly there.
We've been on it for ages. It's so bad. You have to make sure to keep your bloody authority by pointing out, no, this is also bad. This is also bad. This is also bad.
So then we got the match, Ricochet versus Drew McIntyre. Went like 3 minutes.
The last 30 seconds were great.
Yeah, Ricochet.
You got a glimpse of a competent promotion booking this match.
Ricochet got thrown, whipped into the barricade, but balanced on the top of it and hit a drop kick off the top of that. And then missed a splash and got nailed with a Claymore kick for the 1, 2, 3. Looking at the clock going, what's going on here? Well, in comes Mustafa Ali. He's got new gear. He's no longer the leader of. And he attacks McIntyre's leg. Match starts. He splashes McIntyre's leg, gets him a two count. McIntyre suplexes him all over the place. I did like the spot where Mustafa Ali came off the top for a cutter. McIntyre just headbutted him. And we got the return of the countdown Claymore, Hamflet.
Yeah, I knew that was coming because a lot of people get awfully excited about animated match graphics. This is a new like wrestling Twitter kink that I was unfamiliar with. And Drew does the countdown in his WrestleMania animated graphic. I thought, all right, he's bringing that back. But then he pulls a face that I'm assuming is going to get memed into oblivion because he kind of looks pretty bored by it. So after he's done his countdown, he's like, are we still on? Like, can we not just go back to still images, please? I found this really funny, by the way, that like Mustafa Ali got turned on by his own group, kicked out of his own group, and he's the one getting something resembling a push. Like, he's a retribution split. They kick him out and he's the first one to appear on Raw. That really showed them. That really showed Slapjack.
Just brainworms, didn't it? Absolute brainworms. Got nothing to say about the Mustafa Ali match. The last 20 or 30 seconds of the Ricochet one, again, just a glimpse into a competent promotion, booking, like, a really great dynamic. Drew McIntyre's really hard, guys.
Like such a WWE thing of like, well, there you go. You've had your Ricochet and Mustafa Ali. What, you were asking for it. You've had them. There you go. 2 weeks before WrestleMania. Right. Who we got after WrestleMania? Tucker. So he wins, beats both of them. Literally the booking that Sidgwick warned about 4 weeks ago. We sat here and did a podcast and he went, they're going to book him like Roman Reigns and be like, look how bloody strong he is. Look how many guys he can beat on the road to WrestleMania. And not the good Roman Reigns now, the bad Roman Reigns from 4 or 5 years ago, whatever it is. Anyway, McIntyre grabs a mic. He says, I did like the fact he said, all right, Lashley, come out here, do the job yourself sort of thing. Don't have MVP backstage whispering in your ear. And I was like, Drew, he sat behind you, mate. He's been there pretty much the entire evening. Lashley comes out. To be fair to Drew, he did go, I was so caught up in the match, I didn't realise he sat there. So he did acknowledge it, which is fair play to him. Lashley comes out. He says, I've never needed anyone's help. He said he could have ended McIntyre's career at Elimination Chamber. What he did that night is going to pale in comparison to what he's going to do at WrestleMania. McIntyre's enjoying this. He says, look, I know you're dangerous and you'd be the man around here if I didn't exist, but I do exist and it's clear you're afraid of me. They brawl. McIntyre headbutts Lashley out of the ring, and then in comes Baron Corbin. Yeah, long-term booking, guys. Hello, they were a trio a while back. AEW, keep your trios because we've got better ones here in WWE, and this is long-term booking. He attacked him. McIntyre fights back, goes for a claymore. Corbin hits deep six. Lashley puts McIntyre in the hurt lock like four times whilst Baron Corbin shouts in his face, and the show goes off the air. Sitch.
I mean, dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. Send for Baron. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm getting hungry now.
I don't know what I really earnestly enjoyed about this, right? Corbin came out and I had that same memory of you, the OG death triangle, of course, out there in the ring together, hashtag long-term storytelling. And I remembered how WWE really worked me with a hugely emotional pay-per-view main event, the six-man tag, the last stand of the Shield, when Seth Rollins and Roman.
Right.
It was unbelievable. They said that we cannot convince Dean Ambrose to stay. So this is your actual lot. It's fantastic. And I remembered that so fondly that I was like, and then I went, oh Christ, John Moxley was on Dark Elevation. Then I went and watched his match and I felt great. Like my wrestling viewing ended tremendously. From my Monday night wrestling fix, I got plenty because Moxley was tremendous on Elevation. That's what this made me think of. Thank you for bringing these guys back together to plant that seed. So Raw, if we can count the John Moxley Elevation match, ended on a high. Superb way to end the broadcast is going to watch what John Moxley is up to since he walked away from this show.
So there we have it. Less than 2 weeks till WrestleMania. That was Monday.
One of the worst draws I've ever seen. I haven't even mentioned how Nia Jax and Shayna were talking about how they'd beaten all comers and they'd got beat earlier in the night.
Mm.
Pathetic. Brainworms. It's just brainworms. It's sad. Really is sad.
I think it's sad, actually.
I do. It's just really sad. It's not funny. It's sad.
Well, let us know your thoughts on Monday Night Raw and Hot MILF getting knocked in front of a train on WWE. You can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcast from, for daily wrestling podcasts. And whilst you're there, leave us a 5-star review, just like Yep Wrestling did, for a future 5-star review segment where we could skip a god-awful bit of Monday Night Raw. But anyway, this has been the Raw Review. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively,
and efficiently, so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.